Hi, everybody, and welcome to another great episode of the IAC podcast. I'm Ohad Meislish, and today we have an amazing guest, an author, and an expert in many topics, Mark Tinderholt. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how's it going?
A pleasure.
Hi.
Great seeing you.
Every time somebody calls me an expert, I get a little nervous, you know, experts.
So we will see today. So, Mark, introduce yourself for those who still don't know you, please.
My name is Mark Tinderholt. I work for Microsoft. I got to tell you that I'm not in sales, so I'm not going to sell you anything, but I'm a lowly engineer trying to make Azure better. That's what I do at Microsoft Azure. I don't do anything with Terraform or really like infrastructure as code other than use it in my day-to-day job. So I'm a user like other people out there, and I'm just pretty passionate about it. I feel like Azure was a little bit behind our friends, you know, on that big bookstore in the cloud. So I started a YouTube channel called the Azure Terraformer to, you know, spread the love, spread the, you know, the knowledge of, you know, this great tool called Terraform, and just how to handle, you know, managing infrastructure and managing our workloads on Azure more effectively. So that's me.
Thank you so much. So before we talk about IAC, let's talk about the cloud, and you know, you know Azure pretty well. Let's say I'm CTO of a new startup, and I'm wondering whether I should use GCP, AWS, Azure, or maybe other options. What are the main reasons, in your opinion, that I should choose Azure? What are the best use cases that you think Azure provides a lot of interesting value to its users?
Well, I mean, Azure is a big place.
Yep.
Honestly, like the hyperscalers each are big places.
Yep.
So that's a pretty tough question just to answer like in the generic. It comes down to like what human capital you currently have, you know, what workloads that you want to employ within your startup or whatever your business might be, what existing relationships that you might be able to leverage. So organizationally, I think there's a lot more to it than just like, you know, the technical wizardry of things, but they're all pretty much rock solid platforms. And at Microsoft, our CTO, I've heard him say this, you know, we don't like Microsoft doesn't have to be the only winner to be a success in the cloud. We need to be one of the winners, right? So I think it's a multi-cloud world. And, you know, I think each of the clouds have a lot to offer. I'm trying not to give you like a non-answer here, right? But, you know, like Azure has a lot of great things that are, I think, a lot oriented towards like the enterprise. One of my favorite features is Azure Policy, which I often call as like one of Azure's superpowers, which I don't see it exist anywhere on the other two like hyperscalers. But that one in particular, if you're running a business at any sort of scale, it really helps kind of manage your cloud landscape. And there are interesting points of friction for the infrastructure as code practitioner as well, which I often talk about as well, because in the Azure space, we often run into, you know, beating our heads against our benevolent overlords, you know, that are managing policy, right? So it's, you know, there's some challenges in that as well. But I mean, we have a comprehensive, you know, portfolio of offerings, you know, from general compute, data,
yep,
storage, you know, all sorts of stuff. So it's like pick your person. Like what do you want to do, and you know, like what tech stack do you want to rock, and you know,
absolutely.
Go ahead.
All right, so let's start zooming in on ISC. So let's say I chose Azure as the only or one of the clouds that I'm using, and I have a lot of microservices and a lot of different environments that I need to manage. So, you know, this is the IAC podcast. We strongly believe that instead of doing ClickOps there is a better approach of managing your infrastructure with code. Now, in Azure, for what I know, you can represent that infrastructure with different types of code. You have the Terraform / OpenTofu approach, you have the ARM templates, you have the Bicep option, which is something relatively new by Azure, I think a couple of years ago, and other options such as Pulumi. When you talk with your Azure users, I know you're a big advocate of Terraform, but can you explain why you believe Terraform is the preferred option to managing Azure with code? And what do you think about the other options that I've mentioned? What are the pros and cons, maybe, if you'd like to share your thoughts?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Azure, I often refer to as my favorite cloud. It was my first cloud. I started working on Azure way back in the Red Dog days, 2010-ish. But I was rocking ARM templates, you know, and doing a fair bit amount of clickups myself. I discovered Terraform when, like, working, you know, with AWS. And once I realized Terraform could also do Azure, I was like, wow, okay, this is sweet. I only need to learn one tool, one ecosystem, one release motion, one language of, like, getting work done. But I might have to describe it, you know, with its own provider in a different, like, its own language, so to speak, that's specific to that. So that really appealed to me about Terraform versus ARM. And then, you know, today Bicep. And Bicep and ARM are very tightly related. There was a design decision when the team first developed Bicep that it should compile down into ARM. So, like, in that sense, you know, Bicep is a very beautiful and elegant kind of abstraction of ARM templates, and being only, like, essentially Azure specific. Now, I don't follow Bicep too closely, but I am aware of, like, some efforts to potentially have it manage other control planes besides ARM. Like, I think they've introduced Entra ID, and maybe some stuff with Kubernetes or something. I'm not sure. But I think the idea of making it more extensible is there, but it's just not as, you know, vibrant as, like, the Terraform and OpenTofu ecosystem, where you have, you know, tons and tons of different providers that manage all sorts of different control planes. And I guess that, like, the solutions that I work with are, like, it's a composition of different, you know, technologies. Azure is just one of them. Then you layer stuff on top of that, whether it's Grafana, Kubernetes, you know, et cetera. And so having an automation tool that can kind of not be siloed into one particular control plane and kind of branch out, lets you have one way of managing your configuration, just seems to make a lot of sense to me. This might be now the other aspect, like, why not Pulumi, or why not, like, you know, CDK stuff like that? This might be, like, a controversial opinion, but I know it is, like, I have a good friend of mine who loves his CDK.
Yep.
And he's in the AWS space, and, like, there's a whole subculture of people.
Just a shout out that one of the previous episodes we talked with the creator of CDK. Just a shout out to
that. There, yeah.
Please go ahead.
So, I mean, using an imperative like Turing complete language does not super appeal to me, just because maybe because, like, I'm an OG .NET developer and I've seen the amount of layers of abstraction, like interfaces and, like, inversion of control and all sorts of stuff that can go into, like, traditional C# Java code. And then trying to manage infrastructure with that type of, like, layered, you know, technical elegance / complexity just seems like a pathway to all sorts of pain. But So that the whole imperative Turing complete language approach that CDK offers has never really appealed to me. I preferred like the keep it simple, stupid approach of like just a very simple DSLR like HCL has to offer, because then I can see exactly what's going to happen in my environment, because it's all about like
predictability
there. Exactly. So it's not about in application code. You got all sorts of other like architectural things that you got to consider, scalability, you know, things like performance and things like that. But like the apex characteristic you got to optimize in infrastructure as code is predictability. So
awesome.
Reliability.
So you zoom in on Terraform and how to manage Azure and sounds like others like Grafana solutions. And you work closely with the community that wants to learn and to become better and better managing infrastructure. What have you seen in your career, in your journey, with your knowledge and experience when you talk with all of those users? What are they trying to learn? What are they trying to achieve? And how do you just work with this community? How does it look like?
I mean, the diversity of problem spaces is immense, which I think leads to different camps forming of like, and we see it play out on Reddit all the time. Like, this is how you structure like a Terraform root module. I think that just is a symptom of the reality that people are trying to solve lots of different problems, because guess what? Like the hyperscalers are really big places, right? It's got a big umbrella. So you've got people that are trying to automate like data analytics workloads, people that are trying to do application workloads, people that are trying to do more platform engineering where you're laying down the network, laying down the core compute and stuff like that. And they're fundamentally different concerns, right? In terms of where they fit in the organization. So I think as I've engaged with the community, that's become more and more obvious to me. Like I come from an application development background and I kind of fell into infrastructure as code because I wanted a repeatable, predictable way to deploy my software. But there's like so many different personas that use infrastructure as code for whatever. And they constantly come up with new ways that I've never even thought of, like, oh, wow. What are you trying to do? Why are you trying to do that? Oh, okay. Wow. That's interesting. So it's a very, very diverse world out there for sure.
Awesome. And one of the things you've done recently is that you wrote a book about Terraform and the space. Can you tell us a bit about the book?
Yeah. So I was approached. First of all, I've always wanted to write a book. And actually growing up, I always wanted to be an architect. I wanted
an architect?
To design buildings. Yes. I wanted to design buildings.
So you're like George Costanza. That's what you're trying to say. Art Bendeley, if you remember the name, Art Bendeley. That was his fake character, the architect.
His place in the Hamptons is better than mine, I must say.
All right.
I always wanted to be an architect, but I never, I ended up being a software architect. So much in the same sense, I always wanted to write fiction as a child. I looked up to Michael Crichton and Roald Dahl, and I wanted to write books. I ended up writing a technology book. We were talking earlier, like, I'm under no delusions of grandeur, right? Like, I'm not pumping out the next Tom Clancy novel here, but I was just, trying to, I think my perspective on infrastructure as code is more an application developer perspective. Like, how do we apply software development lifecycle around infrastructure as code? And it seems like a lot of the, I guess, zeitgeist within the community is, you know, folks that were in more infrastructure roles already that are now codifying, and maybe they didn't have like that software development lifecycle kind of background. And so I thought that was important to, kind of share with the community. which is why like I kind of focus on implementing Gitflow and GitOps using Terraform. And that was, I think, a critical aspect of the book where you have seeing everything work end to end, and you work across multiple control planes, Packer and Azure, Kubernetes and Azure, right? And not just like, hey, let's spin up some VMs, so to speak.
We still didn't mention what's the name of the book?
It's called Mastering Terraform, a practical guide to something, AWS, Azure, GCP, something. and that was another thing I wanted it to be multi-cloud. I didn't want it just to be like, you know, like 90% Azure and like 10% AWS or whatever. So I tried really hard to make sure that there was equal coverage for all three clouds, AWS, Azure, and GCP. So
talking about mastering Terraform, what do you think about mastering Terraform 5 years ago versus today versus 5 years from now? What are the different things you need to do or care about or think about, be aware of in order to master Terraform?
Yeah, I mean, 5 years ago, I was definitely not a master of Terraform. So it's hard for me to imagine back then. But I think today, you know, we're living in this world where we have traditional infrastructure roles that are kind of retooling, reskilling to like where more and more of their job is, you know, programming and automation concerns as opposed to ClickOps, which is, I think, a very positive trend. And you see this kind of stratification between developers and that traditional infrastructure role like reemerge. And I hope, you know, that we're heading in a direction where we're not going to repeat kind of the sins of the past, right? Where we had discrete silos between infra, network, security, and then the developers, right? And I hope that we're today, like, I hope we're like getting to a place where we're all developers, right? We might have different concerns, you know, in terms of the system that we're building, whether it's a platform or whether it's an application or a service that sits on top of those platforms. But I hope we're getting to that place where we all just recognize that we're all developers, as opposed to like, I'm in the developer camp and I'm in the infra camp and that sort of thing. That's what I hope. Now, looking forward, you know, how AI plays into it, you know, those two magical letters, it's hard to say. You know, I'm fearful that, like, you know, you go back and you look at like what people from the 19th century thought like 2025 would look like, and it's like everybody's riding flying trains, you know, with steam engines and stuff like that. So it's, you know, it's hard to see, you know, how far we are away from things. But I think short term, I hope some of the toil that we do manually today, such as like within the Terraform space, right, is to provider development, right? I hope some of that toil maybe can be automated, you know, and so that we can still provide a good development experience for infrastructure as code developers, while not completely relying on code gen. So we can kind of smooth some of the naturally rough contours of the different cloud platforms to make it life easier and more predictable for infrastructure as code practitioners. I think that is like a short-term thing. I think mid to long-term, you know, we could see infrastructure as code, you know, like completely be, you know, kind of an automated thing. I see folks post things where there's like chat as an interface where it's like provision this thing. It's hard to imagine that, you know, that reality today, but, you know, I think we're definitely going to see layers of abstraction, you know, to hopefully move all of the developers up the stack, so that we're not the concerns that we have today are maybe not as low level, I'd say.
Yeah. So,
but I think that's going to convert with thing platforms like Kubernetes, right? As the layers of abstraction move up that stack as well. But,
got it. So you mentioned some things that are maybe more natural to begin with, such as writing and maintaining the provider's code of the different services. And yeah, you know, AI can scan your API, all your code, and then realize what needs to be defined as your telephone or other provider. That sounds like a very good first step that would save a lot of time. Very, very interesting. You know, I think the biggest question is just the regular amount of code. You know, we developers write code. That's what we do. That's what we're paid for. And in the last few months, we started to see some amazing new things that write code. Now, whether they have the awareness of all the needed aspects that we must take care of, especially around production environments, that's, I think, yet to be proven, but I think the direction is very clear. And so I think the same way it happens to application code, probably a bit later in a similar manner, it will affect the infrastructure related code, whether it's telephone or others. So that's something very interesting to monitor and pay attention. Do you tend to agree?
Absolutely. I think we're in kind of that stage right now where we have skilled laborers such as myself and presumably such as yourself who code, and we use AI as a tool and we kind of extract nuggets, you know, from it. We give it instruction, we extract nuggets from it, and we piece that together. We kind of cobble it together. But once the AI gets good enough, like, I mean, our productivity is going to start ramping up where we're going to cobble and cobble together so much faster. But eventually there's going to be kind of like a moment where maybe we don't have to cobble it together. We don't have to have a human cobble it together. It knows enough about the context, as you said, to cobble it together itself. So that integration work, I think, at least in the short term, you know, us coders are going to be doing. But long term, I think there's a big question mark about whether we're going to be doing that and how much of that we'll have to be doing. But yeah, it's hard to say, you know.
Absolutely. All right, Mark, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and thoughts with us. It was super interesting. Anything you'd like to say to the audience today?
No, thank you, Ahad, for having me on the show, and love your podcast, and just like the diverse of perspectives that you bring, and just like your style, man.
Thank you so much. And thanks everybody for listening. Until next time, see you later. Bye-bye, everybody.
All right. Cheers.